This week, the Working Tools podcast is on the road at the Conference of Grandmasters of North America, being held right here in Seattle, Washington. So our format's a little different. We're going to have a series of short interviews with the attendees. We hope you enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, brethren all, welcome to the Working Tools podcast, a casual conversation around Freemasonry. First, it's important to note that our thoughts and opinions are our own and do not reflect those of our Grand Lodge or respective craft or concordant bodies. Please connect with us and ask questions via our website at theworkingtoolspodcast.com.
Continuing our interviews on day three of the Conference of Grandmasters here in Seattle, we managed to grab some guy from the Scottish Rite. Would you mind introducing yourself, please, brother?
Yes, Jim Cole, Sovereign Grand Commander, Scottish Rite, Southern Jurisdiction.
Well, welcome to the podcast, sir.
Glad to be here.
So are you, I assume you, this is not your first Conference of Grandmasters?
No, this is, I thought it was 25. Somebody said it might be 26, but... I think it is 25 because I started in 2000, so that would be 25.
25, yep.
My first one was in Savannah as Deputy Grandmaster. My second one as Grandmaster was in Phoenix. And then the next time I showed up, I was a Deputy of the Supreme Council, and then I went on the Council, and we try to come and support the Grand Masters with our presence. And I've started having, well, actually Ronnie, my predecessor, started having, and I've sort of expanded it, some meetings on Sunday of the conference among the members of our council who are here so that we can keep them up to date on information as well.
Interesting. So I have to ask the obvious question, and in the 25 conferences you've been to, the best one?
The best one. Obviously this one, because they keep getting better and better.
Well, thank you very much.
Is there anything in particular that you've drawn from this session that's just maybe unique enough to discuss?
I would share that the one aspect that makes me feel very good going from this conference really got reinforced both in three different places. On Sunday, we had a three-hour meeting of the Supreme Council of the Southern Jurisdiction, our Finance Committee, going over investments and things. Then we had a four-hour meeting to go over updates of what we were doing at the jurisdiction level. But also, I went around the room and said, okay, what are you doing in each orient? And what I took away from that, first of all, there were a lot of good things going on, but I saw excitement in the voice of our leaders, and they were talking about it, excitement in their valleys. So then I came, and I went to the Conference of Grand Secretaries. I was able to get in there this morning. I'm an honorary member of the Conference of Grand Secretaries because I spoke to them so much. If they thought if they made me an honorary member, I wouldn't have to speak anymore. But I went in there, and I also saw a lot of positive momentum, a lot of positive feelings, much more so than in the last few years. And then I came into the Conference of Grand Masters ballroom meeting and saw the same thing. So it was present in three different aspects of the fraternity, in an appendant body in the Scottish Rite, in the secretaries, which represent a very special subset of the Grand Lodge system because they generally represent the continuity among the various progressive lines in each of the Grand Lodges. So that was important. But then to see the leadership, Grand Masters, and in some cases, Deputy Grand Masters setting in for them, having a very positive energy. And I think that this conference in all its aspects shows a significant positive energy. And I really feel, and I've said it to several leaders here, that we may be on the verge of a renaissance in Freemasonry in terms of a... I wouldn't call it a new wave in the sense of of the membership numbers that we had 50, 60 years ago, but I would call it a distinct change, potential change at least, in our trajectory of membership.
That's I'll get on my soapbox for a minute. I'm a church-going person, and so our minister the other day was talking about the beginning of Lent and how Lent isn't just a dire time, it's a time of preparation for Easter. And he compared it to in your garden. You go through your garden and you know, before the spring comes, you clean out the sticks that fell during the winter storms and you prepare the flower beds and that sort of thing. And I kind of feel like, from at least from where I'm sitting in Masonry, that we're sort of in the similar season, that things got kind of rough there over COVID and we were all separated and we didn't want to be, and we had little see each other in little squares on the TV screen. But now we're sort of in that season where we're looking towards spring and we're saying, you know, things are picking up, things are going to happen, and what can we do now to prepare ourselves for the having education in lodges, improving the experience, improving how we respond to people who come to seek us. And I think that's the analogy I've drawn in my head.
I very much agree. I think that we are in a different season. That may be a very apt way of putting it, because I think that we are preparing ourselves. We're making better use of technology. That's something we actually was forced upon us, and we have benefited from COVID. We are also enjoying a renewed appreciation of personal relationships. And I said during COVID repeatedly in 2020 and 2021 that this is an opportunity, because people will realize that other people matter. And look, we're not seeing it as much out on the streets, so to speak, but we are seeing that when people are dealing with on individual one-to-one relationships, they're doing it in a much more positive manner. And I think that effectively is moving them closer to the fraternity just by their style of communication now. So I think we've got the potential, and we just need to keep the momentum going. And we also have to realize we are going through a generational change at the leadership level. And any change can somehow be a little bit uncomfortable for everyone, and we have to be cognizant of that. I just spoke about treating one another in a level manner, meeting on the level, acting on the level, and making someone feel appreciated for that. And in the world at large, they don't get that right now. And so people are starting to sort of wise up a little bit, I think, and say, hey, let me do something for me, and then maybe I can kind of improve myself a little bit, and then maybe I can help make a better place in the world, which is basically the Masonic lesson.
Indeed. Yeah, I often quote the, when you get on an airplane, when you're just before takeoff, and the steward comes on and gives you explanation of what's, you know, if the case of emergency, what should happen? The mask may fall from the ceiling, and they say to do what? Put your mask on first. Right. Because if you don't, you can't help the person next to you.
Exactly.
So I think a little bit of self-reflection and self-improvement will then automatically help us go out into the world.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great example. Exactly. We, the story of don't condemn someone else for a splinter in their eye if you've got a stick in your eye. Or a beam, depending on the translation of the New Testament that you're reading.
Yeah. So, going to the Wayback Machine, how did you get introduced to Freemasonry? What's a little bit of that story?
The way I got introduced to Freemasonry, I'm going to have to lengthen this out a little bit to tell, because it's a small world kind of story. In 1969, I was born in Western North Carolina. I've got the Appalachian twang. People say I don't sound like a Virginian, and I don't, because I have a Appalachian mountain of North Carolina twang. I was born in Asheville, North Carolina, And in 1969, as a fifth grader, we moved to Virginia. My dad and mom came up a couple weeks before the move because we got transferred. My dad got a job transfer, and they had to find a rental place because we were still trying to sell the house. I mean, it had been a very quick thing, and we didn't have the cash to buy a new house, so they were going to rent a house for probably a year or something. And they couldn't find a place, so they're going back down the road, and he transferred into Roanoke. So they started traveling west of Roanoke, which was back toward western North Carolina. In other words, getting closer, in trying to find a place to their old home. So they were about to give up, and they stopped at a store just to get a soft drink and sort of see if the store owner knew anything. Well, the store owner had said that he just got off the phone. He had a rental unit that he owned that had opened up that morning. And it would probably be ready in a few weeks. And it worked out that it was ready the week of Easter. So on Good Friday in 1969, we moved up there. And he came the first day that we were moving into the house. And he said to my mother, "Hey, you said you were an insurance agent in North Carolina. Would you like a job here? Well, there's an insurance agent in the bank building where I'm on the board of the bank, and it's in this little town." Now, when I say little town, where I lived, there were 44 people in my high school graduating class. It's that small. So a little country town, and actually his store was in the next little village, which was even smaller. It was 3 miles away. So about a horse ride away, as we used to say. So she went and interviewed on Monday, the day after Easter. On Tuesday, went to work. The insurance agency was owned by three men, all Masons. And two of the men bought out the third one, and it was a father and son, Jim Pierman Sr. and Jim Pierman Jr. And when I was age 25, all of a sudden, and I didn't know they were Masons or anything like that, my mom came to me she had me up for Sunday dinner, and she said, "I think it's time you join the Masons," because it was my birthday luncheon. And I said, "Well, what are the Masons?" And she said, "I don't know, but all the good men I know in my life were Masons." And she rattled off all these different names, both in North Carolina and in that area. And all the deacons at the church, except one, where I had when we had moved there, were Masons. And we're still friends with those, but we had moved from the Baptist church to the Methodist church. And she rattled off some names there. And I said, "Okay, so what do I do?" She said, "I'll find out." So she calls me the next day and says, "You got to come by and sign a piece of paper." I said, "Okay." So I came, and here was this petition filled out in her handwriting, all of it. And her partners, Jim Sr. and Jr., had signed my petition. And they had paid all my fees in advance. And so I signed a petition, and they said, I don't even know where do we meet? And she said, "Well, they're supposed to get in touch with you and have some kind of committee meet with you." I said, "Okay." I said, "Well, tell them I want to meet wherever they meet, you know." So they called, and they said, and guess what? It was on the second floor where that store was, where we stopped, and the whole story started.
Wow.
So that's how I got in. I mean, basically, the short version is my mom told me I should join.
I went to school in Lexington. I went to Washington.
Oh, yeah, W&L. So,
yep. Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Well, my daughter was married on the VMI campus in the chapel. Oh, wow. My son-in-law is a VMI graduate and just made major. He's at Fort Leavenworth right now, finishing major school.
Wow. Very cool. Yeah. Good times in the Shenandoah Valley.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful place. One of my very good friends and old golfing buddies, John Wilson, went there as the president who made the conversion to make sure that, that women could come on campus.
Yes. Yeah, he's a big name on campus. That's
yeah, right. He is. He was a wonderful, wonderful man. He was at Virginia Tech. I worked there for 20 years. So we worked together. We were on. I helped some of the faculty start up companies, and he and I were on one of the boards together. He's such a fine fella. Really was.
Yeah, we've heard from the side how you kind of maybe came into this position as Grand Commander. I consider Bill Miller mentors, and Al Jorgensen was my mentor. I was the first person in Washington I met as a Mason. I've heard the stories a little bit. Would you relate how you came from getting your petition above the store to where you are now?
When I was initiated, the Tyler at the door was the Grand Senior Warden of the Grand Lodge of Virginia, and he took me under his wing. And when he was Grand Master 2 years later, he made me a member of the Grand Lodge Finance Committee. I'm a CPA by training, and the District Education Officer. So I went around and did talks on Masonic education. And then I got noticed by another guy who wanted me on his planning team for when he was Grand Master, which was 6 or 7 years later. And then he recommended me to the guy in front of him who would be Grand Master just in front of him as the chairman of Grand Lodge Finance Committee. And they had a lot of problems in finance in those days in Grand Lodges, not unlike other Grand Lodges, you know. But they, it was so bad that the day before this new Grand Master was to, he was elected, but he was to be installed that evening. And the Grand Lodge refused to adopt a budget for him. They voted down the budget by a vote about 2-1. And I was going to be his chairman the next day after he became Grand Master. I would officially become chairman of the Finance Committee. And so he sent for me, and he was in the corner of the ballroom, aside from the stage, and they were carrying on, you know, with the business of Grand Lodge. So one of the aides came and got me and said, "Frank is hyperventilating. You need to go see him." And I said, "Okay." So I go up, and he said, "I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to have a budget, you know." And I just put my hands on his shoulders, and I said, "Ask the Grand Master to appoint me to a committee. We'll go out. I'll cut some of the numbers out of the budget. I'll come back, and I'll stand up there, and I'll answer any questions they have." And so I did that. And I cut, like, I don't know, it wasn't maybe 1% of the budget or 2%. Came back in, and we had a committee to help with it, but I came back in and I went to the podium. That's the first time I've been at a podium at Grand Lodge, and first time anything bigger than a lodge. So I went up there and I answered all the questions, and then we got to the point. I mean, literally, it went on and on, and we got to the point we didn't have any other questions, and they called for the vote, and they approved it 2-1.
Wow!
Just the way they had rejected it before lunch. And that sort of pushed me along my way. I was chairman of the Grand Lodge Finance Committee, and then I went off of that, became an appointed Grand Lodge officer the next year, and then the year after that was elected to the bottom of the line. Finished in the line. I was Grand Master in 2001. A few months later, when I was deputy Grand Master, I met Fred Kleinkonect at a conference in Williamsburg, and he was asking me questions about investments, and I stood there outside the door where they were talking about investments and answered all his questions for like 45 minutes, and when they started clapping and wrapping up in there, and apparently when I walked away, he turned to the SGIG in Virginia, Dave Kruger, and said, "Put his name on the list to follow you." And so a few months later, the SGIG called me and said, "Commander Kleinkonect would like to talk with you." By then, I had taken a job running the Masonic Home of Virginia, the retirement community. And I traveled around the state raising money. And he said, "I know you're sometimes in the area." I said, "Well, yeah, sure, I'm going to be up there the third week of August." And he said, "Well, that'd be wonderful. Could you come by on whatever it was, Tuesday or Wednesday?" And I said, "Sure." And then I hung up and I called him back and I said, "How do you get to the building? I've never been there." So at the time, I was assistant expert in the Lodge of Perfection in the Valley of Roanoke. But, I mean, you wouldn't call me a dyed-in-the-wool, you know, raging Scottish Rite Mason. So I went in and sat down. The Grand Commander said, "Do you know why you're here?" And I said, "Well, maybe I don't know why I'm here." And he laughed, and he said, "You're on the short list to be the new deputy in Virginia." And I said, "Really? Me?" And he goes, "Yeah." He said, "You were Grand Master last year. You know, you're a young guy." And I said, "Wow." So he goes, "Well, forget the list. You want the job?"
"Yeah, short is this list."
And I said, "Are you offering me the job of deputy?" And he goes, "Yes." And I said, "Well, okay, I'll take it." I said, "Now, can you tell me what it entails?" And so that was pretty much it. I was appointed deputy just after my dear friend Mike Smith of South Carolina. And we both came on as, I think when it was announced, we were either 42 or 43 years old. And your good friend Bill Miller, my dear friend Bill Miller, wrote a scathing letter to Klein Connect saying, you know, this is going to be the end of us. You know, these children you're putting on and all this stuff. But to Bill's credit, he publicly changed his tune, and in fact, he tells that story. He's one of the biggest supporters I'll ever have in my life. You know, from there. I was elected a few months later to active membership at the first. Ronnie Seal was in, elected and installed Grand Commander, and his first act was to crown me and Mike and the group that we call the Magnificent Seven, our class in 2003. And then in 2005, when I came back, they had a financial issue they were talking about in the executive session. And the speaker on the floor said, "Well, I bet Brother Cole over there, sitting in, trying to hide in the corner, will be able to shed some light on this." So he asked me to step out on the floor in executive session, and I answered a few questions, and that became more questions. And then when we left that session, several people approached Ronnie and said, "You need to put him on the finance committee." And then after being on the finance committee for a few months, the treasurer, grand treasurer, decided he wanted me to be grand treasurer, and he retired early. And October 1, 2006, Ronnie appointed me treasurer. And then I sort of went from there to lieutenant, and then I guess I was last man standing after that, became grand commander.
I think both of us sit on the Grand Lodge of Washington Finance. I think we've just learned that the Finance Committee is the portal to power.
The portal, apparently.
it's the portal to pain in my early years on it. I know that.
There are certainly some issues to address, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Well, I'll certainly tell you on that inner circle conversation with Bill about, it was a very similar story, and kudos to you. He said, as part of his explanation, you know, Commander Seal was almost second to none. He just was an amazing Grand Commander. He just almost couldn't do wrong. How could anybody follow him? And he said, "You've done an amazing job. Wonderful, yeah. Wonderful opportunity. And you've just fulfilled his expectations beyond imagine." So,
yeah, he told me that Sunday, and it was wonderful, but it was hard for me to keep myself composed. Because I think so much of him. My only complaint with him is I was being elected lieutenant and looking forward to him sitting beside me as Grand Minister of State. He kept to his principle that he did not agree with us increasing the retirement age from 75 to 80. Well, I say us. I wasn't on the council at the time. He was. He spoke against it. And he said he therefore would uphold his principles. So when he was 75, he announced his retirement.
Yeah. Wow. What massive shoes to fill on all of your parts. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, all I try to do is to at the end of the day, be me, be true to myself, you know, was Thoreau, I guess. He who so would be, in order to be a man, be true to yourself or something like that. This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night, the day thou canst not then be false to any man. That was actually Shakespeare. I apologize. My English teacher from 12th grade would hang me if she knew that, didn't know that quote. We had to memorize 84 quotes in order to pass 12th grade English in my little school. So I can still do about 50 of them, I think, probably. But, yeah, I mean, you go through life and you learn. I think you've got to learn from the good and the bad. You know, we say we should learn from our mistakes, but you should also learn from the successes, too. And I always try to figure out how I can do it just a little bit better. And I try to impress that upon our staff, too, and upon Masons. Is you know, if you slip up or this was not as good as you wanted it, then there's a message in there to you. Because if you yourself have made a judgment on it, then go fix your own judgment, okay? It's the Masonic way to fix yourself first, as you as you stated a while ago. So, I never worry about, honestly, I never think about filling shoes. I just do the best that I can. And, I mean, I do realize the significance of the shoes that are there. And I try to always respect those. But what I really do is to try to be myself, because then that's genuine. And people react better to genuine than they do fake, you know,
absolutely.
Every time.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
I can't imagine a better way to wrap this up.
Well, you're more than welcome. Had a good time. And thank you for this. I've seen a lot of people over here. I know you had the Grand Chancellor from the United Grand Lodge over here. Just you were delayed a little bit because I was talking to him on the other side of the escalators there for several minutes. So, but thank you for your
Thank you very much for your time. Travel safely.
Thank you.